Learn more at ConstantContact.com.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program. John Butts is here, and he's got a big room full of guests. Hey, John, how are you?
Pretty good. I kind of have a problem with that, don't I, Rob?
No, it's fine. It's always great.
Yeah. Well, you know, 2 weeks ago, Tanya was been helping me, Tanya Viktovic. And but anyhow, she got her job back with the city of Tampa, and today's her first day at work, so she's not here to kind of push me along. But hope you're having a good day, Tanya, and hope you're the best, and wish you the best this week. And of course, it was a little rainy, wasn't it, Rob? We had a little shower every now and then throughout the weekend.
Yeah, a little bit on Saturday.
Bit of Sunday.
We needed that.
Yeah,
that was good.
Every drop we can get, you know, we can use. And today we're going to be talking about water conservation and our WaterWise program here in the state of Florida. And you know, it's like we got this gigantic population, and it gets bigger, but our aquifer seems to stay the same. And, you know, it's kind of weird that they talk about these injection wells, you know, and I always kind of wonder, what in the world are they doing? You know, going to inject wastewater into our aquifer, the same place where we drink. And I don't know, it just doesn't sound right, does it, Rob?
Yeah, you know, I think the governor did not sign that bill that was on his desk, the toilet to tap bill.
Yeah,
so I think that there was a lot of pressure on the governor not to sign it. And even though the legislature passed it, he did not sign it last week.
Cool. Yeah. Well, he did something right.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Over the weekend, I was cutting back some of my fruit trees that didn't do very well through the freezes. And I don't know, I just kind of, we're going to be talking about Florida-friendly landscapes. And you know, I'm always interested in, you know, there's a mango tree on the way to the station, a gigantic on MLK, and it's only about a half a mile from here. And this gigantic tree, and it's all froze back. And, you know, I always kind of trying to think of the right tree for the right area and what did well and what didn't do well through our the last freezes. And, you know, I have some ideas and suggestions. But anyhow, during the program, if you kind of found something that did real well and you want to tell us about it, please, you know, be part of the conversation today. Rob, what's up at 11?
We're going to hear Florida this week from this past Friday night. And we'll talk about, you know, there's an effort to vilify the Parkland students. So that's one of the topics we'll be talking about today at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's another craziness that's going to hurt, really. But that's how this system seems to work. Anyhow, I'm always like to start by thanking our listener supporters here at WMNF. We really appreciate it, and without you, we'd be nowhere. And without WMNF, I would probably be nowhere. Not that I'm anywhere, but anyhow, I've always appreciated this great institution here, and I've always been a supporter, and I really appreciate everybody that does that, and I love you very much for doing it. Thank you. As I say, it's our dry season, and you know, our water consumption is always increasing, and there's just a limited amount of water. And today on the WMNF Sustainable Living Program, we'll be talking with three University of Florida Agricultural Extension agents about Florida-friendly landscaping and water-wise conservation principles. But first, Herb Day is upcoming, and one of the organizers, my favorite guest, is here to talk about the herbal event taking place in St. Pete. Bob's a acupuncture physician, a registered herbalist, and owner of Acupuncture and Herbal Therapies and the Professional Herbalist Training Program. Welcome back, Bob Lindy.
Thanks, John. It's always a pleasure to be here. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't come here often enough because I only seem to show up here here on Herb Day to tell everybody about all the great things that are happening in St. Pete. And I really just wanted to take a moment and talk a little bit about an opportunity for anybody. You know, Herb Day is a national, now international event that we've had a coalition of nonprofits that came together. American Herbalist Guild, American Botanical Council, United Plant Savers, and so many other people got a national decree. So every community has an opportunity to kind of create Herb Day in their own way. And it's a chance for us to expose the general public to the idea of herbs, growing herbs, herbal medicine. And one of our personal favorite ideas, and I think it really fits along with the theme for today's show, is the idea that there's so many plants that are already growing here in your backyard that are food and medicine. And although so many transplants come down here and they know their dandelions and all their cool herbs from up north, they get down here and they don't know how to grow anything and they don't recognize the plants anymore. And so one of our goals at Herb Day is to expose people to those things like Seta cordifolia and Biden's alba, spiderwort. There's so many wonderful plants out there that are beautiful. They're already there, so they're Florida-friendly in so many different ways. But we're going to have speakers, myself, we're going to have all of our students from the Tritians Herb School are going to be presenting, the senior class is all presenting. We have professionals will be presenting about everything from herb-drug interactions to herbs for pets, growing herbs. Willa Lamont will be there, cool. Always one of our favorites. We'll have probably close to 20 vendors and some music. So great event that it's appropriate for everybody, whether you know anything about herbs or you could be a practitioner to somebody who just enjoys a cup of chamomile tea, that you'll find something that you'll enjoy. So I hope that you can stop out there May 5th between 10 and 4 p.m. Come for an hour, come for the day, and enjoy all that we have in St. Pete, 2520 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, or give us a call at 727-551-0857 if you want some more information about exciting stuff going on there about herbal stuff.
Cool. And you say you kind of expanded your venue now. Yeah. You got a little more room.
We're super excited. You know, it's a new location. We were located in downtown St. Pete, so we've moved up a little ways there on Central Avenue. Grand Central District has been so welcoming for us. Our new location, besides all the great clinical stuff, we've got a larger classroom. We've actually got a pond and a garden in the back where we've put all medicinal plants. But the community itself has opened their arms and allowed us to expand throughout the block. So we've been able to add more vendors, more businesses are participating, which is ultimately the goal of Herb Day, which is to bring that community together to educate and participate in everything herbal.
Cool. And the date and location again?
Yep. It's May 5th, coming up in just a few short weeks, from 10 to 4 at Acupuncture and Herbal Therapies, 2520 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Okay. And on the internet?
You can find out more about us. Actually, there's two places. No. You can find information on Facebook. The organization itself, if you're trying to create your own Herb Day event, is herbday.org, or our personal website or Facebook. You can find us at Acupuncture and Herbal Therapies, which is acuherbals.com.
Rob, miss anything here?
No, I think you got it. I was going to just ask Bob. Yeah. You mentioned three herbs.
Yes.
Like spiderwort and
you
setic,
always get me.
Seta cordifolia.
Seta.
Seta.
There's lots of different types of seta that grow around here. It's a really interesting herb. It's a nice roadside nibble. It's in the mallow family. It's got these beautiful yellow pinwheel-shaped flowers that open up for half the day. Some of you may know it as wireweed that you get your weed whacker caught on it, try to pull it up, and you throw your back out. It's interesting. It's actually illegal to own Seta cordifolia. It's banned by the FDA because of the ephedrine content in the root.
Oh, wow.
It was banned along with Ma Huang almost 15 years ago. And so don't take your plants across state lines. You might go to jail.
But it grows everywhere here in Florida?
Yes. I'd say further south, you'll find more Seta. As we go further north, it's very hard to find. You know, there's been rumors that there are a number of doctors working on Lyme disease and a lot of other issues that send people here in Florida in order to have them ship fresh Seta up to them for treatment.
And you mentioned spiderwort,
yes,
which I see everywhere.
Yeah, you got a bunch out front here in front of the studio. I personally find it mostly yummy, but you know, if you grab hold of the stem and just kind of squeeze real hard, hard, you'll find that there's this mucilaginous substance, a juice in there, very reminiscent of aloe. And so for so many of the things that we might use aloe, sunburns, red, hot, dry skin, that we can use spiderwort for that same thing. So topical poultices, and think inside as well. I always talk about the big lung tube from mouth to colon. We get ulcerated, hot things that happen along there. So by eating the spiderwort, we can actually start to soothe some of that irritation.
Which is what aloe does,
yes,
too, right?
Yeah. You know, the biggest difference, aloe can block the absorption of certain nutrients and a lot of medication. Where spiderwort and some of the other herbs that we have growing around here, purslane is actually dense in nutrients and doesn't seem to block the absorption of most of your nutrients.
Well, and I see purslane everywhere. And the other, what was the third herb that you mentioned?
You know, probably the Biden's, the Spanish needle. One of my favorites. Oh, yeah. I always tell people, we just did an herb walk yesterday at Sweetwater Farms. I was like, I'm going to talk so many herbs. I think we covered 20 or 30 herbs. I was like, if you just remember one, remember the Spanish needle. It's so easy to identify. It's everywhere. It grows in the sandiest, worst soil. It's a great substitute for spinach. The price is right. It's free. It tastes pretty good. And it has so many uses that... equally, it's very safe and yet very effective. And I don't say that about herbs. Like the cedar, don't go noshing on the roots. That ephedrine has some real side effects. But with the Spanish needle, we can use it for a residual cough. And my favorite use is that lingering cough after a cold and flu with clear phlegm that can go on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Eating up a teaspoon of that, chewed up fresh, the leaves of it, will usually within about 15 minutes resolve the cough. Well, I've used it on children as young as 2 years old, and the only reason I haven't used it on younger, because I haven't had an opportunity. And it's also being researched for things like leukemia. It's very common to use with the co-infections that come with chronic Lyme disease, and the list goes on.
And all of these are things that people spend thousands of dollars or millions of dollars trying to get rid of from their lawns.
Yeah. Right. Every time I do this, I was like, I just spent hours pulling this stuff out. I got rid of it. Now you're telling me to go and eat it. Yeah. You know, it's funny. We lose the information. 100 years ago, there was no Western medicine. And it was something that every mother and every grandmother, every father knew what they could go out into their garden, into the yard, in order to treat those day-to-day things. Now we have CVS. And we forgot. And literally, if you lose that knowledge for one generation, it's gone forever. So one of the reasons we do some of these herb walks and we try to educate people about this is so that knowledge isn't lost, that we can take responsibility for our health care by just going out into the yard and eating those Florida-friendly herbs that are everywhere.
Yeah, cool. Well, what a concept.
All right, real quick, again, the date.
Oh, yep. May 5th, it's Herb Day from 10 to 4 p.m. at 2520 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, Florida. Come on down and bring the whole family. Stay all day and learn lots of stuff and get lots of cool plants.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks,
Lindy.
John. I appreciate you fitting me in today.
Thanks,
you're
Bob.
You're welcome. We're going to just take a short break.
Okay. Well, you're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM.
Okay, you're listening to the WMNF Sustainable Living Show, and joining us are three University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension agents, and they specialize in Florida-friendly landscaping and our Community WaterWise Awards programs. First, we're happy to have Lynn back. She's Hillsborough County's... Extension agent, Florida friend. She's a master gardener and all kinds of stuff. She's a go-to person there in Hillsborough County. Great to have you back, Lynn Barber.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Good to be here.
Yeah, and then also we have Pinellas County's Florida-friendly agent and joining this discussion, Brian, teachings focused on all aspects of Florida-friendly landscaping with a strong focus on landscape design, water conservation, and rainwater harvesting. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And Gee Whiz. guess who's last? Somebody all the way from Pasco County. Jim Mull, he's Pasco County's Florida friendly agent. Great to see you again, Jim.
It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, we ought to start with you, Jim. I know there's all these different extensions. I don't know how many counties there are in Florida, but each county pretty much has an extension agent, something like that. And you have events. So what are maybe some of the events that are going on that people can participate in? And what does your Pasco kind of specialize in?
Well, a couple of events I have coming up are, with Earth Day being here in April, I'll be at Cruz Lake Park on April 28th. Mm-hmm. I have a rainwater harvesting, barrel making workshop in the morning at 10 o'clock. And then at 1 o'clock, we have a compost workshop. You have to pre-register for them because there is a fee for each of those, since you will be either getting a rain barrel or composting unit. And you can find that on the Pasco County websites for all the details. And registration.
Mm-hmm. And what is that? We just go to IFAS or extension?
Easiest way is we've gotten some new websites, and if Solutions for Your Life, the sfyl.pasco.ifas.ufl.edu.
Or just Google it.
Or use your favorite search engine, like you mentioned, and put in Pasco County Extension, and then there's an events calendar.
Okay, Brian, maybe what's up in Pinellas? And, you know, Libby Canahan was on a while back, and I know that you have a seagrass agent, which is kind of unusual for extension services. But what's up over there?
Yeah, this weekend, actually, we've got quite a bit going on. April 14th, I'm doing a rainwater harvesting and bugs in the garden class. You know, a lot of people move to Florida, and we have a lot of insects here in Florida, and there's this misconception that every bug that we see outside is a bad bug, and it's causing harm in the landscape. So we're going to spend a little time talking about all of the beneficial insects that are here in our landscapes and really doing a lot of good for us outside. So that's in addition to the rainwater harvesting class as well. And that's at our main extension office at Florida Botanical Gardens on Walsingham Road. That's at 9:30.
Cool, cool. And Lynn?
Yes, well, Brian and Jim and I are involved with the University of Florida staff, and we have a Florida-friendly landscaping, legally speaking, conference coming up at the extension office in Sefner. And that's going to be on May 14th, and it is Florida-friendly landscaping in the planned community. So people that are part of a homeowner association, it could be residents, it could be board members, could be property managers, people like that would be interested in coming and listening to several speakers. And of course, the three of us have one section that we're doing also. So we have that coming up. And we do compost, micro-irrigation, and rainwater harvesting one Saturday a month, so you can check out our website for that. And we have one other thing. Funny you should mention bugs, Brian, because we're doing Florida-Friendly Landscaping 101 that the City of Tampa Water Department sponsors. And this year it's called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, All Three Sides to Insects, Wildlife, and Efficient Irrigation.
Cool, cool. And we have a WaterWise awards program, and I think WMNF about maybe 4 or 5 years ago was the recipient of that award. Let's talk about that, I guess, first.
Well, this is sponsored by Tampa Bay Water, which is a municipal water supplier for this region. And they've been sponsoring this for years and years. And the cool thing about it is that people can submit their business, their church, their home, their residence, their community association, common areas, things like that for our teams to go out, evaluate the landscape, and then make a determination on whether or not they could be the winner. Now, the cool thing is that the homeowner winner receives a handmade mosaic stepping stone that is really cool. And a business or a church or someone else could go for a plaque option instead of the stone.
Cool, cool. And we're going to talk about some principles of Florida-friendly landscaping, which I guess water conservation is one of them, but who wants to kind of take that, at least start maybe with a couple of the most important principles?
Well, I think probably the most important is number one, which is putting the right plant in the right place. You know, everything else that we teach really, you know, relies upon that. You know, if you're putting a plant in a location where it doesn't want to be, then you're really setting yourself up for a lot more work than you really need to. So that's understanding your site conditions, doing a lot of homework you know, as far as sun and shade patterns, soil texture, soil pH, and then really making sure you're putting plants in a location where they want to be, more so than just, you know, will this plant survive? We get that question a lot. You know, will these azaleas survive in my full sun front yard? Well, you know, maybe, but they don't really want to be there. So,
yeah, Brian, I add to the right plant, right place, the third R, the right care. Because you can put the right plant in the right place and give it the wrong care, and it's still going to suffer. And we see that all the time with people assuming they know how to grow it down here. And it can be very, very different. Vegetable gardening, although something a little aside, we don't vegetable garden in the summer like we did up north, but we vegetable garden in the fall through winter and spring. So things like that.
It's kind of interesting. If I was talking about the Bidens and the purslane, it seems to survive anywhere at any time. It's very, very hardy stuff, and a lot of native plants are. They're used to living here. You know, it's just like when we start bringing exotic stuff in is when we really start having the problems. So, what are some of these water conservation? You know, like we may not get a lot of rain here for a couple more months, and as I say, it be kind of prudent to kind of, you know, we talk about rain barrels, but they kind of go dry this time of year.
I didn't get much fill up this weekend in mine. I just have a little bit at the bottom. But, you know, watering efficiently really is important. And people really don't know what that means. We say it, but they just set it to once a week, twice a week, depending on their jurisdiction and the rules of their municipality, and really don't understand how much you're putting out, and do those plants really need that? You know, a lot of our established trees and shrubs really don't need supplemental irrigation. Many of them are very, very drought tolerant. Not all, but many of them are.
And it's easy to tell what's drought tolerant and what isn't, because there's a resource that is available online for free to members of this particular area of the state in our district. So all they have to do is go to watermatters.org, go to the Florida Friendly Landscaping free publication page, and order your own personal copy of, wait until you hear this title. I'm taking a deep breath. The Florida Friendly Landscaping Guide to Plant Selection and Landscape Design. And I think we probably give those out, right, guys, at specific workshops that we hold at our office. Not all, but at specific workshops. And the cool thing about this is it's over 100 pages. There are pictures of the plants, and it tells you exactly what area of the state of Florida, and we in Tampa are central. I think you're probably central too,
Jim, still
right?
Central, but we're a little cooler than parts of Tampa Bay.
Brian, you know, I look at kind of central south borderline for us, especially in the south part of Pinellas County where I live. I almost consider myself South Florida there for UF publications.
Right. But it tells you native, non-native, the height and spread, what kind of soil pH it needs, what type of soil moisture it needs, so that you can determine which ones. Oh, it even says drought tolerant, yes or no, or high, low, or medium drought tolerance. And the same with salt tolerance if you're by the coast. So it's a wonderful book. I have one in my car, and I have one at home. And it's a great resource. I love it.
And again, where can they get one?
They can get one at watermatters.org.
It's also online. You can read it online, but don't print it because it's over 100 pages in full color. It has great color pictures, but unless you want to go through a few ink cartridges, get one. They send it to you for free from the Water Management District, Swift Mud.
Rob?
Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663, and you're listening to the Sustainable Living Program. We're talking about Florida-friendly landscaping and water-wise water conservation principles with three guests from the local...
three different extension services.
Exactly, three different extension services, Lynn Barber, Brian Neiman, and Jim Mall. And let's just take a phone call right away from somebody who's been holding for a while. Michael's in St. Petersburg. Hey, Michael, you're on WMNF. What's your question?
Well, I have a question why Florida Friendly is being utilized a lot more than the word native is being utilized. It seems like you guys are pushing a lot of exotic plants to be planted in the state. And it's something that native should be way looked at stronger than Florida Friendly plants should be, because of water usage and because of the right plant, right place. It'd be a native plant that's indigenous to Florida.
Lynn?
Okay, Michael, thanks for that comment, for your question. We do promote native plants. The Native Plant Society has meetings every month at our office. So Florida Friendly includes native plants, and it also includes non-native adaptive plants. But we don't encourage any type of an invasive exotic plant. And University of Florida has a wonderful publication, a website where you can go to and look at the list of all of the plants that are invasive that people A, should not have in their landscape, and B, should not even be for sale.
Yeah, but they used to be for sale just a few years.
And that's under
ago.
The IFAS assessment. So if you would.
Yes.
So, Michael, you just so we understand where you're coming from, what plant are you really concerned about? Is there a plant that the extension offices are advocating that you're really concerned about?
Well, I'm just concerned about the whole plant, the plethora of non-native plants that are being pushed. And shame on you. We live in a flyby state. You need to know where you live. And you can't, because, you know, ecologically, it's wrong to plant a non-native in Florida because it is a flyby state. Things migrate through here year-round. And if you are planting the right plant, like you're practicing what you're preaching, you should be planting Florida native plants. And there are herbs and things like that that are native also.
All right.
Well, nettle, for example, you know.
Well, Michael, I'm trying to figure out where the point of disagreement is, because I hear a lot of positivity coming from the room here.
Wrong.
It's rhetoric. It's
rhetoric.
Okay. All right. Well, could you give us an example?
Saying non-native.
Michael, I'm not trying to argue with you, but could you give us an example of a plant that they're advocating that you would object to?
Mexican petunia.
Okay. All right. That's a good start. Mexican petunia.
Well, they used to promote the Brazilian pepper. They used to promote
Mexican petunia. There are invasive Mexican petunias.
Yes.
If the plant produces seeds,
and even the milk
I believe it's invasive.
Michael, could you hold on for just a sec, please? A sec. Thank you.
There is a variety called Purple Showers that does not produce seeds. We planted some by the Conference Center at the Hillsborough County Extension Office some years ago and decided that we did not like that plant at all. That variety is not invasive, but it's aggressive. So we have removed that plant.
Michael said that you promote Brazilian pepper.
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
All of it should be eradicated.
Yeah.
As best as we can.
Michael, I think there's more agreement than disagreement. That's my sense, but I could be wrong.
Well, I'm just concerned about how you guys push, like, the right plant, right place, and then about managing the plant where natives, you don't need to do anything other than kind of water them in, and then they sustain themselves that way. You know, ecologically sensible plant material, where these Florida-friendly plants require pesticides, herbicides, water itself. You guys are talking xeric, which means less than 18 inches of rain a year, and we live in Florida that gets over 50. So our xeric scape is pretty lenient. But if you're planting plants that need to be watered, you're not xeric scaping.
All right. Well, Michael, thanks. Thanks for making your points.
All right.
All right. Great to hear from you.
I do want to follow up on one important aspect of that, of just, you know, saying plant native plants as an end-all be-all solution is not really correct. We still want to put the right plant in the right place. So the example we give is, if I took a native wetland plant that wants shade, it wants really wet feet, and I put that in the middle of my full sun, sandy front yard, that's not the right plant for that location. So I've put a native plant in the wrong place, and it's still going to suffer.
Could you give us an example of that?
No. not off the top of my head.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll think of one in a sec. Something that really wants to be in a shady, wet spot sometimes is planted in a dry spot in the middle of the lawn.
Yeah, give me a second to think about that.
Some of the native ferns would come to mind.
Sure.
You know, or some of the wetland plants. You know, we grow elderberry. Not generally in landscapes, mm-hmm. but if it's in a wet area, if it's in my backyard where there's a wet area, I have a drainage area back there, and it grows just fine. It's native, but it wouldn't do well in most other parts of landscape because of its requirements. Also, native plants aren't necessarily insect or disease free. You know, the insects are adapted to our location and feed on the native plants, and diseases can get after them too. So again, right plant, right place.
You know, I think we had this caller on maybe last year's native plant program, and I think he owns a native plant nursery. And, you know, I have nothing wrong with native plants, but it's really funny how people are so purist. But when we go to the grocery store, are we eating native fruits and vegetables from Florida? No. And like I say, if it's something that's, you know, like a rose, I mean, well, I guess he wouldn't advocate us having roses, and I really enjoy my roses more than anything in my yard, truthfully. I really do, and I know they're not native, and I know they require a little extra attention, but even roses, there's hardier, better roses to grow in the area.
Oh, yeah, they're cultivars. They'll do far better than some of the hybrid teas and things that require a lot of chemical input to beat back diseases. I wouldn't do that to myself.
All right, so here's an email that came in from B. Jordan, and B. Jordan, or Bill writes, rather, I went immediately to watermatters.org looking for the 100-page colored manual. Very confusing, and I couldn't figure out where to find it. That's Bill in St. Pete.
Bill, check out the free publications tab.
And I think it's the second page, if I remember. Not the first page.
All right, so go to watermatters.org, look for the free publications tab, and look for the second page.
And then scroll down, and you're looking for that great big long title, Florida Friendly Landscaping Guide to Plant Selection and Landscape Design.
So I need you guys to help me out. Over the weekend, I went to a spring in Florida, and next to the spring, and this was outside of all of your counties, next to the spring, somebody had just applied chemicals that was flowing into the spring. It's a clear sea to the bottom Florida spring, and some homeowner who lives next to the spring is putting chemicals on their lawn, and the land slopes down from the house down to the spring. Why is that going on?
Boy.
Well, one of our principles is to protect the waterfront. Right. So that is the ninth principle of the nine. You know, there's things like establishing a buffer of native shoreline plants there to help clean any water that might be running down that hill. And then certainly within that low maintenance zone, you don't want to be applying any chemicals that would run off directly into the water body.
How do we get to that word to homeowners who live along these beautiful springs that they may be screwing up the springs by putting chemical fertilizer on their lawn right now?
Well, we're certainly trying, you know,
through
outlets like, you know, like yourself doing radio and TV. We're doing a lot of social media work. The water management districts are trying to help with that effort. You know, I think to a lot of people, their really green lawn is really important, and maybe they don't think that their actions are directly affecting water resources. And so I think part of it is a perception problem, maybe.
Mm-hmm. But the university has done an awful lot of research about applying fertilizers to home lawns, and when it's actively growing, it absorbs most of it if it's healthy turf. So if it's done properly, it really isn't as big a problem as getting a chemical directly into the water, as you saw a homeowner apply. And a lot of times those chemicals, it's not necessarily the active ingredient that's so worrisome, it's the inactive ingredient, which is a soap-like surfactant, if it's a herbicide that can kill fish. Mm-hmm. You know, put a drop of soap in a fish tank and you have dead fish tomorrow.
Is there a list, and this is probably hard for the government to maintain, but is there a list anywhere of Florida-friendly landscapers? Because I think a homeowner, you know, they've got a big investment in their home, and they want to make it look good. And, you know, is there a list of landscapers out there that have projects, that have done beautiful projects, to say, oh, this could be replicated throughout the middle part of Florida here?
I direct people to the Florida Nursery Growers and Landscape Association. They have a training and a certification program, and they maintain a list of certified professionals on their website. So that is a resource that I direct people to. I think native nurseries oftentimes have landscape designers, and the two in Pinellas County, I know they do really great work as far as designing landscapes that we would consider to be Florida-friendly. So I would look at maybe somebody like that whose beliefs might be a little bit more in line with this than a traditional, you know, guy with a truck designing a, designing
the
landscape.
I don't know if the Florida Native Plant Society has chapters in each county, but they have chapters all over the state, and their meetings are monthly, like the one here in Hillsborough, and that's an excellent place to find out about native plants and the right the right ones for the right area, because it's just like anything. The plants down here are different than the plants that are in the Keys and up around Tallahassee, but I would say that would be the place to kind of look and question those people.
Well, our guests are from the county extension offices in Hillsborough, Pinellas, and Pasco. Lynn Barber is here, Brian Neiman and Jim Mall, and John Butts is here. And Brian, you mentioned beneficial insects. I saw over the weekend, again, along the springs, tiny baby grasshoppers, black grasshoppers. I think they call them lubbers.
Eastern lubbers.
Eastern lubbers, yeah. Taking over several plants and eating them, I would guess that those would not be among the beneficial insects that you were describing earlier.
Those would not be. No, those don't. Once they get large, they get to be yellow, kind of armored.
They get to be about 3 inches long, big. They're giant. But when they're babies, is there anything that you can do?
They're pretty slow and docile, I would say. So they all kind of clump together on plants, so you can knock them all into a bucket of soapy water, and that's a good way to control them.
So do it by hand.
Do it by hand.
All right. Yeah. So what are the beneficial insects? Well, because you don't want to destroy the beneficial insects, so what are some of the beneficial insects that we should be looking for and protecting in our backyards?
Pretty much 99% of the insects in your landscape are beneficial. Look at bees and wasps and butterflies and all the pollinators, and all of those are great things. The lubber is bad. You can always, if you don't want to pick up a full-grown lubber and throw it in a bucket of soapy water, a pruning tool works quite well. Now, it grosses out some people, but I do know that they can completely defoliate an entire garden in like a day. So insects are not bad, and when we over-chemical everything, we're killing off all the good bugs when we're killing off the 1 or less than 1% of the bad bugs. So then we're taking on all of that work in addition to the work that we already have. And I did have one comment to make about when you're looking for like landscape professionals, people that apply chemicals, there's a program that the University of Florida has with the state that is the Green Industries Best Management Practices. So people that do that type of work are supposed to be certified. So if you as a homeowner or a business want to know, make sure that those people have been trained, ask them if they have a GIBMP, Green Industries Best Management Practices certificate, or ask to see that certificate so you know that they've been trained in appropriate fertilization and pesticide use and things like that.
Well, we're going to take some more phone calls and read some more of these emails that have come in. If you've got an email question, or if you've got a question, you can send it to us via email. Our address is dj@wmnf.org, and you can call us up at 813-239-9663. This is the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts. Here's an email from 813. They write, "I'm noticing many more wasps among my milkweed this year. How can I keep them away from the upcoming monarchs that I'm expecting?" Wasps.
That's a tough one.
I know some people will grab that cocoon and then actually, or probably the caterpillar on the milkweed, and we'll actually put it into an enclosed thing, kind of take it inside and protect those.
Like a cage.
Like a cage, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. To protect those and sort of rear them until they get to monarch stage and then release them outside. So that might be a way to do it. I don't know. Do you have any other ideas?
Well,
not that are easy.
No, that is a good question. That's a challenging question.
But I know people who raise butterflies, for release, that is a struggle of theirs, that the predatory wasps sometimes go after what we call good bugs, but that's Mother Nature, too.
Mm-hmm. Would you leave the cocoon attached to the milkweed? Would you cut the milkweed and then leave it attached?
I think I've seen where they cut the plant, left the cocoon attached to the plant, and put it inside of a
cage.
And
that's not going to harm the development of the butterfly?
No, I don't believe so.
I've even seen it where people just cut that little stalk that it's stuck to and then pin it onto a cork board of some sort with a protective screen around it.
Now, this email says it's from Mike, and Mike says, I live on the Manatee River in Bradenton, and I have bamboo, palm trees, and other plants and trees. Can your guest suggest a type of natural fertilizer that I could use on the bamboo, the palm trees, and that won't harm the river?
Well, first of all, I would say, how do they look? Are they growing well? Or, you know, if they're green and look healthy, they probably, I'm kind of one of those people that if it isn't broken, I don't try to fix it. Mm-hmm. I use very, very little fertilizer in my landscape, and things do surprisingly well. Now, sometimes palms have some issues with nutrient deficiencies, and unfortunately, I'm not aware of a truly, quote, natural, we'll use the word organic, fertilizer. But again, if it's applied properly, you know, during the growing season, the plant's going to absorb it. You know, I would keep it at least about 10, maybe 15 feet back from that, the Manatee River, though.
I think even a lot of times natural fertilizers are,
yes,
they have nitrogen.
They have nutrients,
and,
yeah.
And you're going to have the same problem.
Good point, John. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, even organic forms of nitrogen, manure, leaves, if those get into water bodies, they're going to cause the same problems that fertilizer would. Mm-hmm. So you want to be careful with that.
All right, so we got a bunch of questions. Tom's in Largo. And Tom, what's your question for our guest?
Well, I just had really a couple short comments. I enjoyed the show, as usual. I live in Largo, and I took all the grass out of my yard, corn yard, quite a few years back, and I just kind of let stuff grow in and then, you know, watch what grew and pulled up the stuff that wasn't desirable. So I ended up with some nice, you know, native plants, and now I just kind of pull up stuff I don't want, and I don't get a whole lot of weeds and stuff I don't want. That and my only other comment was about those little grasshoppers. I'm pretty much plagued by them every year, so the only thing I could figure out to get rid of them while they're little, this might not sound too good, is spray glue. That was the only thing I figured out to get rid of them, though. Otherwise, you just got to show them all individually.
Yeah, but what does that do to the environment?
Well, I just spray it on them. I don't spray it all over the place.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere. It's just that stuff that you use, like to, you know, glue things together. It just goes on whatever plant those grasshoppers are on. Glue them, you know, so they suffocate, I imagine.
All right. Well, Tom, thanks for that suggestion.
Okay, thank
thanks. I don't know if that's officially in the County Extension Office list of recommended things to do for lovers.
Well, if it's not labeled for that use, so we would never recommend it.
Okay.
Maybe some soapy water.
Or yeah. Just smash them.
Yep.
Yeah.
They meet the fickle fate of my feet a lot of times.
All right, so Gail writes from Bel Air. She says, maybe you've already covered this, but one tremendous way to conserve water, make sure that the plants you put there receive it, is to convert to drip irrigation. One small dripper dedicated to each plant delivers what the plant needs, and the weeds get no encouragement. Mulching around plants also conserves water. It's easier than you think to convert your existing watering system to drip irrigation, writes Gail.
That's correct. Mulching is another one of the nine principles, and so is water conservation. So she's absolutely right, and I think all three of us teach micro-irrigation workshops within our counties, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So you could call your county extension office if you have any doubts about how to do it, and
yep.
get instructions and trained how to do it.
Yep, please do.
And, you know, the one thing that I always see people do, and they'll put in a nice drip system and they'll turn it on and leave it on all day.
Yeah.
That isn't necessary, right? Well, you know, like if you have an emitter on a plant, the most time, what do you think? A half an hour, an hour, or something like that?
Well, really, it's 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch.
Okay.
is what the university recommends.
Stick
so,
a can out there.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you can just look at it because it's going to say how many gallons per hour.
Okay.
It's gallons per hour on micro, and it's gallons per minute on in-ground. So we have drip tubing at the extension office in Hillsboro, and it's like 0.9 gallons an hour that comes out. So
per hole.
Right. Yeah, so just figure it from there.
And
yeah.
I look at the recommendation to establish a 3-gallon shrub is to put a gallon of water on that shrub every time you water it. So if you have an emitter that puts out 0.9 gallons per hour, you're going to run for about an hour is another way to look at it.
Let's go to Susan, who's in Tampa. Hi, Susan, you're on WMNF. What's your question about sustainable living?
Hi, yes. I'm interested to know if you have any homeopathic type products that are good for bug killing, and also, have you heard of neem, and is neem, like crushed up neem, good for killing bugs? I tried it on some white flies that were on a night blooming jasmine kind of plant, and it seemed to be effective, but I don't know if I used enough of it.
Well, we want to practice what we call integrated pest management, which really looks at the landscape as an ecosystem, and that there's a lot of information on that, but it really starts with using the least toxic methods available. So you want to look at the health of the plant. Number one, did I put it in the right place? Is it healthy? Am I not giving it too much fertilizer? And then from there you would start with physical removal. So we already talked about the lubber grasshoppers and physically controlling them. And then you would start with soaps, horticultural soap or oil, and neem oil being one of those products that would be considered a little bit more environmentally friendly. And go ahead, Jim.
And sometimes these insects like whitefly can be very hard to kill with just one spray. And also remember, they're on the underside of the leaves. So direct your spray to the underside of the leaves. Make sure you dilute the product according to the bottle. And you usually need at least one other application. It's usually between 10 and 14 days apart. And then just scout to see how it's doing afterwards for your control. Lynn?
And that's a lot easier to get to the underside of the leaves if the plant is in a pot, because then you could always like lay it down and spray it that way. But a hose end sprayer that you can get at the big box stores, and then it has like an increment level on that plastic container. You hook it up to your hose and set the spray. That's a lot easier too. So if it's a plant, a shrub that's in the landscape, it's just easier. You can put it underneath it. You can get the underside of the leaves and top down.
And the other question, thank you. The other question I had is about grass. Is there a drought-tolerant, insect-resistant grass? I have a house I need to sell, and I just hate to put in St. Augustine or any of those, really, for the front lawn.
Well, okay. First of all, it depends on how many hours of sunlight you're getting. Again, if you're getting less than 5 or 6 hours of sun, there won't be any turf that'll be doing well under that regime.
Even drought, or even...
St. Augustine.
Yeah, even St. Augustine. Everything has to have a minimum of 5 to 6 hours of sun. Even if it's allegedly shade tolerant, it still has to have 5 to 6.
Now, if you're over 6 into 7 or 8 and have poor sandy soil, Bahia, however you want to pronounce it, is very drought tolerant. Once it's established, doesn't have a whole lot of insect problems. It can potentially get mole crickets, but I've been with Extension for over 18 years, and I've not seen that be a problem in homeowner Bahia grass care and culture. Of all of our warm season grasses, it's the least problematic.
And are those grasses also on your website?
Yes. If not on our home pages with our individual counties, our EDIS system, EDIS, .IFAS.UFL.EDU.
Or just type in UF, UF turf grass.
Or do it Lynn's easy way. Thank you, Lynn.
Boom. I'm always looking for a shortcut.
Hey.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you. Good luck, too. And here's an email from Sarasota. It's Pat, and Pat says, I have moles. Are they good? I don't like them. Right. Right, Pat.
Well, first of all, do you have moles or do you have pocket gophers? If you have a big lump of sand in the yard, it's about a foot high and about a foot wide, that's an eastern pocket gopher, and you may have several mounds kind of more or less in a straight line. They're hard to deal with. They're not really hurting anything, but you can trip on them in the tunnels and stuff like that.
How big is a pocket gopher?
About the size of a guinea pig.
Okay, so they look like moles. They're almost as small as moles.
They look more a little like a guinea pig than a mole. Yeah. But a mole makes a much smaller serpentine tunnel just underneath the surface, and you may get a small sand pile here or there. So depending on which one you have, there will be different ways to deal with it. First of all, poisons in the yard are illegal in the state of Florida, so don't do that. Putting a hose down there and trying to flush them out doesn't work. Other things, noise-making gizmos do not work. For a mole, you can get a trap at like a garden center or a feed store. As far as the eastern pocket gopher, probably best hiring a nuisance wildlife trapper who understands how to get down in their tunnel and trap them.
Let's go to Renee in Tampa. Renee, you're on the Sustainable Living Program, and we're talking about Florida-friendly landscaping and water-wise water conservation. Hi, Renee. Renee?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, it's actually Renee. It's Serene Renee.
I'm sorry, Renee?
That's okay. I'll answer to anything. I've been called all kinds of names. Listen, first of all, I want to thank you so much for this program. I'm fairly new to Tampa. I've been here for less than a year. And I had the good fortune of visiting Tulele and that underground spring outlet that comes in there. And then I actually lived for a short while at the headway, I believe, of that spring, which is in Forest Park area. There's just some little tiny springs bubbling out there. You know, I just wanted to know if, you know, you all being more local than me, have any history that you could, you know, give me about that whole underground spring project. You know, I also wanted to ask a question. You know, I also had a neighbor there. I think he had a body shop. You know, chemicals were pouring into the springs there. What do I have as a neighbor? You know, who can I call or what can I do? You know, yeah, maybe I could knock on the door, but, you know, who should we call to report these types of problems? You know, what can we do as a community to try to protect these spring waters?
Okay, and Renee, you're talking about North Tampa, right? That's where Forest Park is, okay, near Forest Hills, okay?
Forest Hills, thank you.
I think you could get a hold of either the Department of Environmental Protection or EPA. DEP or EPA would be my recommendation.
And Lynn, correct me if I'm wrong. DEP, would that be the 1-800-HELP-FLA number, Brian?
I'm not sure.
You might want to try that, the 1-800-HELP-FLA. That goes up to the state, up to Tallahassee, and maybe they can direct you for a phone number.
Wonderful.
All right, Renee, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Jim and Brian and Lynn, we're down to the end of the show. Quickly, where the next event that you're putting on, and Jim, how about we start with you?
Well, I mentioned that I'm having Earth Day events, but I'll be on this Saturday at the Zephyr Hills Library talking about turf. But one of the big things Lynn and Brian and I have coming up and have started is our Water Wives program and putting in for awards, and we hope, as we mentioned at the beginning of the hour, that people, businesses, homeowners, hospital, common grounds from an HOA would enter their landscapes. We're looking for people who are doing the right thing, are examples of water-efficient landscapes that are neat, that are tidy, that exemplify what you can do with not necessarily a whole lot of water or other inputs, but can maintain it.
Let's give them the website.
And the website, Brian's handing it to me. If you want to put your landscape up for this award, it's TampaBayWaterWise.org. Let me repeat that, TampaBayWaterWise.org. You have till June 30th, and we hope everyone that's listening will think about putting in their landscape. It does not have to be perfect. We're looking for examples that can kind of stand out in front of the Joneses' homes that are so cookie-cutter, and yours is somewhat different and water-efficient.
The form is easy to complete.
Yep.
It'll take you no more than 10 minutes. You can provide a photo or two, and we send out a team of people, make an appointment with you in advance. It's really cool. You too could have an award-winning landscape.
It's great because you get a team of experts to come out and visit with you, so you get some feedback on what you're doing. Even if you don't win, I think it's valuable in that respect that you get some feedback on what you're doing.
And we meet so many passionate gardeners and how they've converted from cookie-cutter STP, same 10 plants, into something much more interesting and water-efficient.
And Brian, the next event that you're having?
This Saturday, April 14th at our extension office, rain barrels and bugs in the garden.
And what part of the county is your extension office in?
It's on Walsingham Road.
So you're in Pinellas County.
In Pinellas County at the Florida Botanical Gardens.
All right. And Lynn Barber, your next event?
Okay. Hopeful? Well, we do have the triple workshops this coming Saturday, but registration is closed. You have to register in advance. So we do this every month. So we've got May 5th, June 2nd coming up. Don't forget, City of Tampa residents, we've got that Good, Bad, and Ugly thing coming up on May 19th at HCC on Dale Mabry. And Brian, Jim, and I have May 14th with the University of Florida coming down to Hillsborough County to our conference center for Legally Speaking, FFL in the Planned Community.
All right. Well, Lynn Barber from Hillsborough County, Brian Neiman from Pinellas County, and Jim Mall from Pasco County, thank you so much. I think we could go on and on with this because there's a bunch of emails that we haven't answered and a lot of calls that we haven't answered.
Yeah. You know, we kind of started with a rough phone call there in the beginning, but really I think extension is like any entity. It kind of grows up and learns, and you have best management practices and all this great stuff. And there's a little bit of, you know, controversy there, but hey, it's good stuff. It is free. It's us. We pay for it. Use our extension service.
Hey, thanks to Bill Grace. He was our phone producer today. So, John, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep.
All right. The Sustainable Living Program with John Butts will be back 2 weeks from today at 10 a.m. right here on WMNF Tampa.
Thank you.
And if you want to talk to any of our guests, call them at our front desk at 813-238-8001, and they'll talk to you over the phone.
Sure.